I want to start today by picturing a boardroom. It's a pretty serious setting. The North European Church History Department.
Okay.
You've got the manager there, probably expecting, a standard report on archives or something. And then someone walks in and drops a statistic that sounds honestly like they just made it up.
It does sound incredibly suspicious. I mean, it's the kind of claim you'd expect from a marketing pitch, not a historical review.
Right. They
Right.
look this manager in the eye and say, "We believe that 95% of all European miracles in the last 100 years happened in one specific place during one specific 3-year window."
95%.
95%. That is a massive slice of the miraculous pie to claim for yourself.
It's such a provocative statement. If I'm that manager, my immediate reaction is just skepticism. I'm thinking, okay, show me the data.
Of course.
Because statistically, that's an outlier of, well, impossible proportions. Is this survivor bias? Is it just nostalgia? Or did something actually anomalous happen there?
And that is exactly the investigation we are launching today.
Yeah.
Because the where is Finland.
Right.
The when is a very tight window between 1972 and 1975. And the data isn't a spreadsheet, it's this massive multi-format project called Memories and Miracles.
And we should probably clarify what we're looking at here. We're analyzing an announcement. It's dated February 1st, 2026, and it's titled 2 months until presentation. So what we're seeing is a group of people, scrambling to finalize this history before a very hard deadline.
They're not just reminiscing.
No, they are trying to prove that their experience in the cold, ice, and dark of Finland was historically significant.
I love that phrase from the source material, the cold, ice, and dark. It really just it sets the scene, doesn't it?
It does.
But you mentioned they're trying to prove it. This project, Memories and Miracles, it seems like it's doing a lot more than just collecting old journals. It feels like they're trying to build a monument.
They are building a case, and that's what makes this so fascinating to me. Usually, when groups do a reunion book, it's what, a paperback with a few blurry photos?
Yeah, something simple.
But Memories and Miracles is attempting to legitimize their personal history as official history. They are preparing to present this whole package to the Church History Department as a one-of-a-kind project. They want to be in the archives.
So let's unpack the actual narrative here.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to claim 95% of the miracles, you better have a good story. And when we look at the submissions they've collected so far, a very specific theme emerges. They call it the planting seed story.
This is critical. I mean, if you don't understand this concept, you miss the whole point of the project. In the corporate world, and let's be honest, missionary work has a lot of structural parallels to sales.
Sure, or recruiting.
Exactly. You usually track the plus who signed the paper, who got the baptism.
The person standing there at the finish line gets the trophy.
Usually, yes. That's the great man theory of history. But Memories and Miracles is arguing for something else entirely. The text explicitly says, "We didn't know we were planting seeds, but we were."
So they're shifting the metric.
They're shifting the metric of success from the harvest to the sowing.
The source material gives a really concrete example of this chain of events. And, for anyone listening who might not be familiar with the jargon, let's break it down. They talk about a companionship.
Right. So in this context, a companionship is two missionaries. They're assigned to stay together 204/7. It's the working unit.
So companionship A knocks on a door. They deliver a brief message. The door closes. In a normal data set, that's a zero, right? That's a rejection.
On a transfer board, which is basically the org chart or the weekly report, that looks like nothing happened. It's a failure.
But the narrative in Memories and Miracles tracks that specific household over time. A full year later, a completely different companionship teaches the first discussion.
Which is this introductory lesson, the sales pitch, if you will.
And then years later, a third companionship witnesses the baptism. So the project is connecting these dots to show that the first group, the ones who just knocked on the door, were actually the origin point of the miracle.
It's a relay race where the first runner.
Ever sees the finish line.
Exactly. And I think that's why this project is so psychologically important for this group. You have to imagine being a young person in Finland in, what, 1973. It's dark, it's freezing, the language is notoriously difficult.
Oh, I'm sure.
You probably felt like you were failing every day.
Because you weren't seeing the results.
Right, you didn't have the data. Memories and Miracles is using hindsight to validate those struggles. It's saying you thought you were just cold and tired, but actually you were starting a chain reaction that took 50 years to resolve.
Wow.
That's a powerful reframing of one's own life story.
And they really delve into this deeply. The source mentions that they've produced audio content, specifically podcasts 21 and 23, that are entirely dedicated to this planting seeds philosophy.
It has to be the core of it.
It's clearly the emotional core of the book.
It has to be. If you're going to claim 95% of the miracles, you have to redefine what a miracle is. And in this case, the miracle is the endurance of the seed over time, not just the instant gratification of a conversion.
Now, you mentioned earlier that they're trying to make this official. And to do that, you need a physical artifact that looks the part. We need to talk about the book itself, because the specs they list for memories and miracles are surprisingly detailed.
They are. And in the archival world, the physical medium, it matters. If you want something to last for another 100 years, you don't put it on a floppy disk and you don't print it on cheap newsprint.
No. And they are going all out. Memories and Miracles is listed as hardbound, printed on 80-pound coated paper.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
That's the thick, glossy stuff you see in art books, with vivid illustrations and graphics.
That choice signals intent. They are creating an heirloom. They mention in the text that this book belongs on a coffee table.
Right.
That implies they want it to be seen, to be picked up by grandkids. They are trying to physically secure these stories against the passage of time.
But there's an interesting contradiction here, or maybe it's a balance. It's a high-quality physical object. But they are using a very modern, very democratic way to distribute it. They're using Lulu.com.
Which is a print-on-demand service. And this is significant because it means there's no gatekeepers. They aren't waiting for a traditional publisher to say, yes, your history matters.
They're just doing it.
They're publishing it themselves.
And the price point reflects that. They say it's available for about $30, but they explicitly state that this is just the printing cost plus shipping. No one is making a profit on Memories and Miracles.
That removes the commercial element entirely. It reinforces that this is a labor of love. And frankly, it makes the project more accessible. If they were charging $100, it would feel exclusive. But at cost, it's for everyone.
But take that accessibility even further. The source says everyone should have access to this book. You can read it online or download the PDF for free.
Wow.
So even if you can't afford the $30, or if you live somewhere where shipping is impossible, you can still own the history.
That's the public history approach. By making it free digitally, they ensure that the barrier to entry is zero. It validates every single contributor because it guarantees their story can be read, regardless of the economics.
But here is where Memories and Miracles goes off the rails in the best possible way.
Okay.
Usually you get a book, maybe some photos. But this project has expanded into a multimedia empire. I was looking at the section on audio and music, and I was genuinely surprised by the scale.
It is unusual. Most reunion committees might put together, what, a Spotify playlist of hits from 1974, Hooked on a Feeling, something like that?
Exactly. But this group is creating original content.
Totally different.
Let's start with the podcasts. They have created 24 fun podcasts. Derived directly from the articles submitted to the book.
Think about the transformation there. You write a story text on a page. That's a cognitive activity. But then someone narrates it, produces it, turns it into audio. Now it's an immersive experience.
Yeah.
The text says, as you listen, you'll relive your mission. They are leveraging the audio format to trigger memory in a way text simply can't.
And they are actively recruiting for this. There's an open offer. If you send your memory to their email, WadeEraBook@gmail.com, they will turn it into a podcast episode.
That's amazing.
It's like they're running a radio station for their own history.
It's a brilliant incentive. Get your story on the air. It gives people a reason to stop procrastinating and actually write their submission.
But the music.
I'll wait.
Okay, this is the part we really need to dig into. Because the source material mentions something called the Memories and Miracles Lyrics Book.
Yeah.
And they claim to have created 50 songs.
50. That is an enormous amount of music. That's roughly 4 albums worth of material.
Over 4 hours of music, according to the text. And the key phrase here is, your stories became songs.
I'd love to know the mechanics of that. It suggests they took these anecdotes, maybe a story about a train breaking down or a holiday meal, and lyrically adapted them.
Right.
That changes the genre of the memory entirely. Well, a story is about facts. This happened, then this happened. A song is about emotion. It captures how it felt. By turning these stories into music, they are elevating them into art. It suggests that the miracle isn't just the event, but the feeling surrounding it.
And they have the technical setup to support this. The source describes a soundtrack page on their website where you can play all 4 hours, and a songs and lyrics page so you can read along. It's a full multimedia experience.
It recognizes that people learn and remember differently. Some people will read the hardbound book, some will listen to the podcast on their commute, some will connect through the music. Memories and Miracles is trying to hit every single cognitive channel to make sure this history sticks.
Speaking of hitting channels, we can't talk about Finland without talking about the sensory experience of living there. And, well, that means food.
Oh, yeah. Food is often the strongest anchor for memory. You can forget a face, but you rarely forget a smell or a specific taste, especially if it was something comforting in a harsh environment.
The source material takes a specific detour into the culinary arts. They've included a recipe page on the website, and they list three specific items. Now, I'm going to attempt these, and I'm hoping my pronunciation isn't terrible.
Let's do them. These are staples of Finnish culture.
First up, we have pula.
Pula. That's the sweet cardamom bread. It's braided. If you served in Finland, you probably ate your weight in pula.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's the ultimate hospitality food.
Next is sima.
Sima. That's interesting. It's a fermented lemon drink, essentially a homemade mead, usually served around Vappu, which is the spring festival. It has a very distinct yeasty lemony profile.
And finally, pie raka.
Pie raka. That's likely Karjalan piraka or Karelian pies, rye crust, rice porridge filling, maybe some egg butter on top. It's hearty, warm food.
So why include recipes in a history book about miracles?
Because it grounds the miracles in reality. If the project was just about spiritual experiences, it might feel abstract or, you know, ethereal. But when you include the recipe for pula, you are reminding the reader, we were real people. We got hungry. We sat at tables.
It bridges the gap.
It bridges the gap between the spiritual and the physical. Memories and Miracles is saying the smell of that bread is part of the history, too.
All of these elements, the book, the podcast, the 50 songs, the recipes, they're all converging on a single point in time. There is a massive event coming up.
April 3, 2026, the reunion.
This is being organized by Sister Wade, and the text has a very poignant note about her. It says, the book was written for Sister Wade, but it belongs to all of us.
That hints at the origin story of the project. It likely started as a tribute, maybe a gift for a beloved leader, but it outgrew that scope. It became a collective asset.
It belongs to the group now. And on April 3, they are inviting all Finland missionaries and their families. And there's this really cool interactive element planned. Contributors can sign the book at the event. They tell the attendees, you are the authors of Memories and Miracles.
Which scrolls back to that theme of decentralization. It's not a history written about them by an outsider, it's written by them. Signing the book creates a physical connection between the person and the text.
But this reunion isn't just a party. We alluded to this at the beginning. There is a presentation happening on that same day.
This is the high stakes part of the timeline. On April 3, they are formally presenting Memories and Miracles to the Church History Department.
Why is that such a big deal? Why does it matter if the history department has it?
Because that's the difference between a scrapbook and a historical record. If you keep a journal, your kids might read it. If you get into the church history department archives, you are part of the institutional memory.
Yeah.
Researchers in 100 years can find you. It validates that your specific group, your time in Finland, matters to the global organization. It's a bid for permanence.
Which explains the panic in the source text. Because to make that April 3 presentation, they have a deadline that is coming up remarkably fast.
February 15th. That is the hard stop.
The document says, after this date, we will order the finalized copy. That sounds pretty definitive.
It has to be. Printing a hardbound 80-pound coated paper book takes time. They can't be fixing typos on March 1st if they want a physical book in hand for the April 3rd presentation.
So the urgency we're seeing in this 2 months until presentation announcement is real. They are pleading with people. Submit your article soon. Each of us wants to read about your memories and miracles.
And notice the language there, short or long. They are trying to lower the barrier. They are terrified that people will self-select out.
You mean people thinking their story isn't good enough?
Exactly. A lot of people might look at the title, Memories and Miracles, and think, well, I didn't see the Red Sea part. I just rode my bike through the slush and got doors slammed in my face. They might feel their story doesn't qualify as a miracle.
But based on the planting seeds philosophy we discussed.
Based on that philosophy, the bike ride through the slush is the miracle. That's the argument the project is making. They need those mundane stories to complete the picture. If they only get the highlight reel, the history is incomplete.
So if there is anyone listening who served in Finland between 1972 and 1975, or knows someone who did, this is the final boarding call. The train is leaving the station on February 15th.
And if you miss it, you miss the chance to be part of that collective record. You miss the chance to have your story woven into those 50 songs or those 24 podcasts.
When you step back and look at Memories and Miracles as a whole, the 95% claim, the multimedia, the food, the deadline, what is the big picture here? What are they actually doing?
I think they are fighting against oblivion. We live in a digital age where things just disappear constantly. Emails get deleted, servers crash, but this group is saying, no, we were here, we did this work, and it mattered.
It's an act of defiance in a way.
It is. They are taking a 3-year window from 50 years ago and asserting its value. By creating a physical book, by creating art and music, they are ensuring that the cold, ice, and dark isn't the only thing that's remembered. They are ensuring the warmth of the community is what survives.
And perhaps that's the real meaning behind the 95% statistic. It's not about mathematical precision. It's about the density of the experience. For them, 95% of their life's most important moments happen there.
I think that's a fair assessment. To the outsider, it's a statistic. To the insider, it's the truth.
Well, we are just about out of time for this deep dive, but I want to leave you with one final thought on the title, Memories and Miracles.
It's a strong pairing.
It suggests that the memory is the miracle. The fact that 50 years later, this group can come together, write songs, share recipes, and present a unified history. That might be the biggest miracle of all.
I'd agree with that. The community is the outcome.
The deadline is February 15. The reunion is April 3. If you have a story, send it in. Don't let your seed go uncounted in Memories and Miracles.
Every single entry changes the picture.
Thanks for diving in with us today, Terv.